Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Neil Conan spent about 12 years as in the host chair on NPR's Talk of the Nation, but the show was taken off the air after NPR announced in March that it would cease production in June. Neil Conan is in Kansas City today. He received an award from the International Relations Council of Kansas City last night, and he'll join us here in just a moment. Later on this hour, two grandmothers who are seeking a crackdown on gun violence. But first up, Neil Conan, the former host of Talk of the Nation, a show that so many public radio listeners dearly, dearly miss. And Neil, so good to have you here again. Welcome back.
Good to see you again, Steve.
Neil, I want to begin with an ending, your final words as host of Talk of the Nation.
In a minute or so, I will go back to where I started in public radio. I will be one of you again, a listener. Yes, a listener sponsor, but a listener critic, too. I will cry and laugh and yell at the radio. And we listeners have a vital function. It is our job to hold member stations and NPR accountable. So right here, I form my own private contact with NPR and my member stations. I will listen, and yes, I will open my checkbook, but I need some services in return. Go and tell me the stories behind everything that happened in the world today. Explain why it happened and how it affects our lives. Do it every day. Tell me what's important and don't waste my time with stupid stuff. Bye-bye. Signing off for Talk of the Nation and from NPR News, I'm Neil Conan in Washington.
You know, that was such a nifty farewell.
Thank you.
How hard was it for you to write those final words?
It took a long time. I knew the end was coming, obviously, for quite some time.
Yeah.
And it kept me up at night. I just wanted to do it right.
Were you happy with it?
I was. Yeah. I feel I missed one phrase that I should have put in there in retrospect.
Which was?
Get it right.
Yeah. Yeah. A good one to have.
Yeah.
But what a great call to arms in an era when so much media is just hunkering down and trying to wait out the day.
And it is watching the media shift in its desperation to try to find a reason to be anymore, yeah, when the fact is the reason to be is the same reason to be as it's always been. Tell me the news. Tell me what happened.
Hmm. So, Neil, what happened? I mean, why did NPR cancel a show that reached 3.5 million listeners a week on more than 400 NPR member stations? I think a lot of people are still a little confused, and I think I'm one of them.
Count me in.
Yeah, really.
Really, you need to talk to the folks at NPR because, again, they didn't ask me. They did ask me to stay in a different role for a lot of reasons. I decided I did not want to survive the show. And so I'm here now. And the decision, as you know, NPR faces real financial difficulties. And these are well-meaning people with serious problems, and they are trying to address them. They thought that expanding Here and Now was an alternative that would help them compete better and help them engage member stations in a new kind of relationship.
Yeah. So are you still formally affiliated with the network?
No.
You're done?
I'm done.
You're still on the website.
Am I?
Yes. As a matter of fact.
If I got news for you. If I thought the website was making any money, I'd demand, some royalties.
So did they just call you in one day in March or February and say,
earlier than that, but yeah. And that they were at that point looking ahead to making that decision. And obviously they don't tell the employees until pretty much the decision is made. And so, at that point, it was conversations about how to guide the end and what future, if any, I might have at NPR.
Did you have any inkling it was coming?
No, I didn't. Our numbers were the best numbers we've ever had. We had the greatest number of listeners, the largest number of stations in the program's history. And the assumption about the show was always that it did not make money, but it didn't lose money. So,
So your reaction that day, then, when they broke the news to you, was what?
Oh, I was distraught. I was very upset. And, the next few months, I think, were extremely difficult. One of the people I talked to a lot was my old friend Alex Chadwick, who was the host of NPR's Day to Day.
Sure.
And that show was also prematurely ended, and he and his staff had to go through the same process that me and my staff did, which was, you know, the show is ending and you've got to fill 3 months. And you've got to do it professionally because you're paid and it's also your obligation and that's what you do.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you're trying to find out if you can help the people on your staff, you know, land somewhere and get another job. It wasn't so much about me. I'll be okay. But I really worried about some of the people on the staff to make sure that they would find a place either at NPR or in the system or somewhere where they could continue to thrive.
And some of those folks are still looking today.
Some are, yeah.
Wow. What kind of reaction did you get from listeners? What was the blowback from the listening audience?
A lot of people didn't understand. When you have an audience of 3.6 million a week, you get differing views. So.
Imagine that.
So there were a certain number of people who were cheering. So, but very few. Most of the people just didn't understand. And it's a rule of life in radio that as soon as you change programming, the first thing you do is really irritate everybody who liked it.
Yeah.
It takes a while to develop a new audience who likes the new thing. So you have to be ready to do that. As NPR, the whole system found out, as so many stations went from the transition of being essentially classical music stations or jazz stations or whatever to becoming more news talk oriented. And of course, the first thing you do when you cancel the morning music program is really irritate the people who liked morning music.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to find the people who like Morning Edition.
We're visiting with Neil Conan, the former host of Talk of the Nation. So what does the closing down of Talk of the Nation mean for, you know, public radio and the future of public radio and what the direction of the news content is going to be? Do you have a crystal ball that you can gaze into and sort of see where this thing is going? Because I don't. I keep wondering myself.
I honestly don't. It's something I've thought about quite a bit, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And particularly in some of those darker moments.
Yeah.
And the fact is, I honestly don't know. The test will come, I think, the first time there is a huge breaking news story. We ducked one when the president decided not to start a war with Syria.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a moment that would have tested how good the people were going to be in the midday.
Yeah.
And it's those moments, I think, when the audience depends most on NPR and most on the voices that they've come to trust over the years. And in this case, you either earn that trust or you don't.
You've done so much of that over the years, mm-hmm. these presidential debates and, wars. And I think I read that I had forgotten this. In 2004, you were the first moderator of a radio only presidential debate, the first one since 1948.
Yeah.
And I read that, I recalled it. What a moment.
It was a great moment.
It was
a fantastic moment. And one of the, obviously I wasn't the only person involved, but it was in Iowa, in Des Moines. And one of the great decisions was we just did it without an audience. It was just the candidates in the studio with me and, obviously a technician. And so there was no applause. There was no playing to the audience because there was no audience in the room.
Did it make a difference?
I think it made a huge difference because, people are used to appealing. They have their regular written-in applause lines. And when you're not getting applause, it's not because people don't agree with you or whatever. It's because there's nobody in the room. So you actually have to think a little bit more.
Yeah.
You have to get out of that familiar, campaign routine and start thinking a little bit more. And they were facing challenges from each other, not just from me and not just from listeners who were sending in questions by email. So it was a great moment. We had really a lot of fun with it.
Well, a great moment. And I'm guessing there must have been a little bit of pressure, a little bit of butterflies.
Oh, yeah.
A few butterflies in the stomach. I mean, that is a big moment.
It was. And it was, setting it up so each candidate has his own little green room with to everybody's preparing and all that sort of stuff.
And M&Ms without the brown ones in them.
Exactly. Yeah. All that sort of stuff. Yeah. To make sure the case of Southern Company. Yeah. all of that.
Who wanted that case?
Let's
make some news. Yeah.
And
I don't blame you.
The one moment that really my the stomach dropped out was there was a moment when Dennis Kucinich, who was running for president that year, held up a pie chart which was something he did routinely at events, television events. And I had
no one
to explain,
had reminded him this was a different medium.
And
here.
I had to explain on the radio that Congressman Kucinich was holding up a pie chart on the radio.
And then lots of silence after that then, right?
I don't think he ever forgave me.
Yeah. How much in advance of that debate were you sort of sitting down and working with your crew to come up with the kinds of questions you felt you had to come up with to make that debate work?
We did it for a couple of 3 days in advance. But, you know, we do this. That's what we do for a living,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
So it's not as if I hadn't talked to any of those candidates before.
Yeah.
And it's not as if we weren't familiar with the issues, you know, just in the normal run of routine. I mean, people said all the time, hey, it's Wednesday, political junkie day. You know, how much time do you spend getting ready for junkies? Well, hardly any, because I spent all my time getting ready for junkies. There's nothing special.
Yeah, yeah. Neil Conan's our guest, the former host of Talk of the Nation. Our phone number here, if you want to join our conversation with Neil, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also drop us an email to updatedate@kcur.org or tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. And we have a call here from, from Ken from Maryland. Ken, good morning.
Yes, I'm a long-time listener and a first-time caller.
Well, speaking of the political junkie, Neil, yeah.
Hey, Ken.
Conan.
Conan, yes.
Conan. Yeah, anyway, I'm a big fan. But whatever happened to that political junkie guy you used to work with that basically carried you for all those years on NPR?
I think they're trailing the gutter for him.
Neil, we miss you so much. I had to get on this show. I love Steve Kraske, but you know how I feel about you. I love you to death. And every day, and I mean this every day, people say of all times not to hear Neil and Ken on the air. Why now?
When doesn't it drive you crazy, Ken?
It does, because all the emails I've gotten is in my handwriting.
Well, Mr. Junkie, while we have you here, what do you make of what's going on Capitol Hill today? Because we're 24 hours away from at least what some folks say is some sort of cataclysmic default. What do you make of it?
Or possibly 24 hours from Tulsa.
Well,
there's plenty of time. I mean, the world doesn't come to an end until tomorrow. So if they come up with a deal today, that's plenty of time. It's completely expected. This is exactly what Congress does. It lurches from Congress to crisis to crisis to crisis, and nothing ever long-term gets resolved. And that's why we need Neil Conan on the air.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, Ken, I've been meaning to write you an email because that thing we're going to do in Alaska next summer looks like it's shifting to July.
July in Alaska. Well, you know, there's no place like Nome. These are the kind of funny jokes we used to do every week on the air.
Well, Ken, we miss you too on the air. It's such a pleasure to have you here, and thanks for taking a couple of minutes to give us a shout.
Take care. Good luck to both of you.
Good to talk to you, Ken.
That's Ken Rudin, the political junkie from Talk of the Nation. You know, Neil, people are going to wonder, is there a chance that you'll find a way back onto the airwaves somewhere?
There's a chance. I think the medium is changing, as you know, the world of podcasting and sort of boutique broadcasting.
Yes.
I guess Travis Smiley is the latest one to go into it. But really, you know, credit where credit's due, this was Glenn Beck's idea.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that can work if it's set up properly and if you've got the kind of backup and support for it. And, you know, you do a program and people subscribe to it on the Internet for, what, you know, $10 or $15 or in some places cost $15 a month or $25 a year or whatever the freight is. And if the idea is if you can translate, well, our 3.6 million people who listen for free every year, if you get 5% of those people to subscribe directly to the program, well, at that point, you start making some money.
So you're looking at that.
I have looked at that and talked about it to some people. Nothing has happened with it yet, and it may not. I don't know.
Can you get 5% of your listening audience to come over? I mean, that's the million-dollar question here, obviously, but, I mean, can you?
I don't know. And, you know, that's why I don't want to risk my money.
Yeah.
But the question is, how do you find those people again to let them know that you're there, for one thing? And, you know, that's kind of the difficult part, because it's not just the expenditures for the, you know, the equipment and the microphones and the lines and that sort of thing and hiring a staff. It's spending enough money to make sure that you can reach the people to let them know that this product exists so that enough of them will then subscribe. So it's a tricky proposition.
We have a full board of calls for Neil Conan, not surprisingly. But before I get to them, I just want to read
from Silver Spring, please.
Yes. I want to read a little list here of some of the things you have done over the years for NPR. You served as editor, producer, executive producer of All Things Considered. You've acted as NPR's foreign editor, managing editor, and news director. I'm not even close to being done here, folks. Neil has worked as a reporter based in New York, Washington, and in London. He has served as NPR's bureau chief in both New York and London and anchored live coverage of many live events, including national political conventions, confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominees, and a presidential impeachment. Remember that.
That's 6 months of my life I'd like back.
For 5 years, he hosted Weekly Edition, the best of NPR news. Following the terrorist attacks on September 11th, Conan played a major role as an anchor of NPR's continuous live coverage. In 2004, I've already mentioned, he hosted the first radio-only presidential candidates debate since 48. You know, I'm not sure if it's exhilarating or just exhausting to hear all of that read back to you here.
It's the resume of a man with a short attention span.
Yes. Okay. Let's go to some calls here. Lots of folks want to talk to Neil Conan. Mike from Mission, Kansas. Mike, you're on with Neil. Good morning.
Thank you very much. At first I thought that you had retired, and it was a decision on your part. And to find out that you were let go is just amazing.
It's not quite. They did want to keep me on. They let the show go. I could have stayed at NPR in another role, but I decided I didn't want to.
Talk of the Nation, the midday has never been the same, and you're very much missed. And you're both of you are two of my favorite on-air presences. So I just think they made a huge mistake, and it's just not the same type of reporting, and not the same. You guys are just very good at what you do, as far as asking questions and listening, and really listening. And I've missed having you in the middle of the day, so thank you very much.
Mike, thanks very much for the kind words.
Mike, and by all means, just so you know, around here we refer to folks in my end of the business refer to Neil Conan as God, just so we're all clear here. Let's go to Walter.
It's only because they're dyslexic. It's actually dog.
Walter from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Walter.
I was following you on your last broadcast day, and I actually made it in to make a call, and your screener asked me to come up with a story to share, because she said that, you know, your program is all about stories, and I wanted to lament the loss of your program, because it represented to me the loss of the public using the public airwaves being able to air their thoughts and views, and I thought that was very important.
Amen, Walter.
Thank you. And I'm sure you know of our local host that passed earlier this year, Walt Bodine. And,
sure.
Not to be overly dramatic, but to have lost your show was another blow similar to the loss of Walt Bodine, because Walt Bodine was one of the best listeners. Your previous caller mentioned being able to listen. Walt Bodine was A1, the best listener, and he truly, and he let you know it, that he wanted to know what the callers were thinking and feeling, and he did an excellent job of that.
Mm-hmm.
And on your last weeks or day or whatever on your show, only just now when you spoke earlier about how the conditions or situation of your departure. I was actually wondering if, back then you played it such that you didn't reveal that they were ending the show against your wishes, perhaps. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, that's, that's taking on your boss on their airwaves. So,
Well, yeah, and I'm just saying kudos to you for your professionalism.
Well, thank you.
I was wondering if you had just one more minute, could I share with you the story that I wanted to... I thought of a story that I could have
quickly,
shared
Walter, if you would. Lots of folks want to talk to Neil this morning.
Real quickly. Well, one day on your show, I was calling in about something, and I had the floor, and my dog started going nuts at the mailman in the background, and you could hear it, and it was kind of an amusing moment for a moment. And the additional funny thing was that my mailman listens to your show, and he was a couple doors away still, or maybe even across the street, and he knew to take a wide berth because he heard my dog barking in the background and he recognized my name on the air.
That's
anyway, well, thank you so much.
I'm glad you called, Walter. Thank you.
And I'm glad you finally got to relay that story, Walter. Yeah. Thanks very much.
Appreciate that. Let's go to Victoria from Lenexa. Victoria, you're on Up to Date. Our guest today is Neil Conan.
Hi, Steve. It's Victoria.
Hey, Victoria.
I just wanted to call and say, Neil, I miss your show so much. Your show was appointment radio.
Oh, thank you.
It was like, your show's going to be on. Okay, what errands do I have so I can work around your show or be in the car, you know, get the gas in between and all those different things. And it was like, what was your topic going to be? Is it political junkie day? And I would kind of structure the things I had to do during the day around your show. And that is really missing now. Now it's kind of news all afternoon. Well, until Terry Gross gets on, but I missed the structure, and it was really appointment radio. And also, your voice is so great. You convey such empathy and feeling, and I never liked it when you had a guest.
I did.
It was never as good when you weren't on, and I really miss your show, and I hope you do something else.
Thank you very much.
Victoria, thank you. And Victoria's a friend of mine, as you can tell, mm-hmm. and I know everything she said is very sincere because she's referred to your show as appointment radio to me in the past as well. Let's go to Rick from Overland Park. Rick, good morning.
Oh, good morning. It's such a pleasure to get to talk to you all and to say hello to Mr. Conan, because
it's just Neil.
I'm sorry. Okay, thank you, Neil, to say hello to Neil. Because ever since that show, it was announced that show was ending. It just, it just sunk my heart a little bit because, I mean, I've been listening to NPR for probably 15 or 20 years, and I think Morning Edition and All Things Considered are A1, AAA, fabulous programs. But the best program, and it hurts me to say the word, to use the was, but the best program was Talk of the Nation, because it combined news, up-to-date information with allowing the public to call in. And, Neil, I mean this in all sincerity. I have never heard a person on NPR more informed on a wider range of subjects than you, sir. I just was amazed at the information that you had and the analysis that you could bring to bear on so many different topics, and that really served the public interest. But yeah. I'm not saying this to be nice. I mean it.
Well, it's actually a function of the very expensive education that NPR provided me by sending me on all those stories and all those places and giving me all those different things to do, where eventually, if you smash my head against something for a while, I do pick up some of it and retain some of it. So,
you know, moving past, and Ken, thank you for the call, you know, moving past Talk of the Nation itself, what assignment at NPR did you enjoy the most?
Oh, London.
London?
4 years in London as the bureau chief, which is, you know, sort of an expansive thing.
You were the bureau.
I was the bureau. And,
but I could anticipate that.
The opportunity to travel to all of those different places and do all those different things, the Reagan-Gorbachev summit in Iceland,
wow.
And
yeah.
Covering coal strikes in the north of Ireland and elections in France, and to travel to the old Soviet Union in the old days. And I was just remembering with my old friend Deborah Amos, who was my producer at various times.
Wow.
She was based in London in those days. NPR was so cheap that when you flew to the block, you would fly to Tempelhof in Berlin, unload all your stuff, and then hump your equipment and your luggage through the Berlin Wall to the East German airport, Schönefeld, and then get the cheap flights from Schönefeld to Warsaw or Moscow or wherever it was you were going. And I just remember the first time doing that, we were walking with all of our equipment through the Berlin Wall, through Checkpoint Charlie, and in the snow, and you're looking up and you see the guys with the searchlights and the machine guns and the barking dogs, and you see, why am I walking in this direction? what are we doing here?
What's this all about?
Saving $124.
And obvious question too, you've had so many great guests over the years. Are two or three that stand out to you that were just absolute personal thrills for you to have either in the studio or on the phone with you?
As you know, a lot of it is a blur.
Boy, tell me about it.
And you end up, you know, a lot of time I'd leave the studio at 4 o'clock Eastern and somebody said, boy, that was a great first hour. I said, first hour? What the hell did we do in the first hour? So
I always tell my wife, so I come home from work at night, she said, who'd you have on the radio today? And I'm like, that was 5 hours ago, baby.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, you know, it really is the regulars. The person I miss the most is Ken.
Yeah.
I had a great time every Wednesday.
The great rapport and the whole thing.
And it was, yeah. It was, you know, you never really had to worry about it, except what he might say. But, you know, it was always a great show, and we had such a great time.
That's a beautiful thing, because when you can relax with someone like that who you're comfortable with, because everybody else who comes into your studio is someone you're meeting probably for the first time, and you have Ken Rudin sitting there with you, mm-hmm. and that's just a great thing.
It was such a tremendous opportunity, and also that you knew – people loved it.
Yeah.
You know, we never got anything but you know, the worst jokes got the best response.
And Ken had a few of those, too, didn't he?
Yes,
four
he did.
Or five, I think, right. Over the years. Yeah. Well, what else strikes me about our phone calls today, and there are more I haven't gotten to yet here, is just, you know, the fealty, the loyalty that so many folks had for Talk of the Nation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really begins to speak to that connection, which I love about radio. You know, it misses, you lack the prominence of TV, which is okay in so many ways.
Really good in some ways.
But that connection you have with your listeners and folks who are sitting usually by themselves somewhere and you're talking with them, that is such a neat thing. You know?
It is such a direct connection.
Yes.
To speak to people, as you say, one-on-one for the most part. And these days, a lot of times, you know, they're wearing those earbuds. You're right in their head.
You're right there, aren't you?
And we're lucky to be on an FM network because we're used to speaking on a conversational level like mm-hmm. we're doing now, mm-hmm. as opposed to, hey, time to pack the wax and hit the tracks.
Hits the tracks, yeah.
As we're here on AM radio or TV, where the psychology with the camera, you know, 10 or 15 feet away, you sort of, people tend to shout as they address
yes.
What they think of as the listener over there. So it is this very intimate medium. And if you stay on for a couple of 3 years, as you've learned, you know, people, the people who listen to you are the people who really like you. The people who don't really like you, they don't
they
listen
go on
anymore.
Somewhere else, don't they? You know, you spent, folks might forget, you spent a year of your life. You took a break from NPR and you went and you broadcast minor league baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I have it somewhere here. Aberdeen?
Aberdeen, Maryland, yes.
And the name of the team was?
The Aberdeen Arsenal.
Arsenal, yeah. So could baseball be a second calling for you as you head down the road?
Oh, boy, I would love to do that. I would really dearly love to do that. It was so much fun. Once you figure out how to do it, and it is a challenge, I've been in radio my whole life since I'm 17 years old, and it was such a challenge to learn how to do play-by-play, which I thought I knew how to do.
And harder than it looks, undoubtedly, like everything.
Yeah. But once you do figure it out, it is like stealing money. In the minor leagues, it's like stealing very little money,
mm-hmm.
but it is was so much fun to do, and I would do that in a shot. Again, if given the opportunity. Of course, you'd rather do it on a major league level if just because the bus trips get to be
a little rough.
Really long.
Here's maybe a good way to end here. Don writes us this, Neil. Like everyone else, I miss your objectivity, effort, candor, humanity, sense of humor, civility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The only times I remember you're getting irritated was when someone questioned your objectivity. Your heartfelt responses on those occasions indicated just how hard you tried to maintain your neutrality and fairness.
That's a very nice compliment. Thank you very much.
I think maybe you have your 5% out there who might be willing to pony up a few bucks to listen to Neil Conan maybe sometime.
Get a chance on Sunday night on Burn and Energy Journal. I'll be on with Alex Chadwick doing a story on sea level rise from Greenland.
Yeah. Well, Neil, it's so good to have you here. What a pleasure.
Steve, thank you very much for the
opportunity. Wish you all the best in the future.
Appreciate it.
That's Neil Conan.